Ahead and call the meeting to order. We're sorry to be a few minutes late getting started, running a little behind, so we'll work on catching up. Okay. Next time we throw it, too, so. Thank you for being with us today. We're really pleased to be here on the campus of Utah Valley University. And we welcome all of the, you as guests who have joined us as well. We're really happy to turn the time over to President Tumminis.
Thank you very much, Chair Simmons. Commissioner Wilson Hume warned me that we're already late, so he said, be as fast as possible. But I said, I will take my full 12 minutes. I hope that's okay. And he said, well, it's your campus, so that's okay. Thank you. I just want to say, begin with this. Thank you so much for being here today. And thank you to those of you who have been on this campus many times in the past 4 to 6 weeks. Some of you are with us at our Presidential Scholarship Ball in October. Very pleased to report that we raised a record amount that evening, $908,000, which will fund 352 semesters of school, I believe, or 33 students full ride over 4 years. Thank you, Katie. I need these pictures, actually, because I often don't know what to say unless I see a picture prompting me. Thank you also for those who participated in the K-16 meeting this week, K-16 Alliance, and then the K-20, the first ever K-20 conference yesterday. I hope that, like me, you have found those sessions useful and that we are bringing all of the stakeholders in education from K-12 to the tech to the UShi together to discuss how we can collaborate, how can we do more, how can we do what we do, as somebody said, better, faster, cheaper, and more effectively in the coming years. Now I really don't know what to say after this. Maybe I'll just look at my computer to prompt me. If I could have my computer over here, Cam. Oh. Thank you also to those who attended the groundbreaking November 11 for our Scott C. Keller building, which will house our new business school. And we had about 600 people attending that event. This is a game changer for us to finally have this kind of building, what I call 21st century space for our business students. We are now, I think, 40% of business students in the system now are students at Utah Valley University. And I have to report something special. I operated a backhoe. How many were there? You saw me operate a backhoe. I am learning new skills. It's all about skills and competencies in higher education. I've talked about the Alliance already. So just to review, you know, UVU exists to help students, families, and the taxpayers of Utah and to help the state continue to have the workforce that it needs, continue to have a prosperous economy. And our mantra is something we remain strongly committed to. Come as you are, UVU has a place for you. Our enrollment this fall semester is 41,728, but before you have a conniption about how large we've become, please bear in mind that 12,000 of this is concurrent enrollment students. And as we know within the K-16 and K-20 groups, we know how important it is to go into the high schools and expose juniors and seniors to college-type experiences. I think that all of us would agree on that, and so this concurrent enrollment is also extremely important. So can you get the slides up? So the enrollment. Just a quick review of this question, whom are we at UVU serving and how? Whom are we serving and how? So for the whom are we serving, 36% first-generation students, 32% are older than 25, many non-traditional students, 40% are married, 17% support at least one child, 80% are working, and nearly 20% are people of color. I will also add that 43% of our student body are Pell Grant recipients, so that also tells us something about their socioeconomic backgrounds and why they need higher education. How are we serving them? We are serving them by defining the values that inform what we do: exceptional care, exceptional accountability, and exceptional results. And this morning at breakfast, I presented UVU Vision 2030 with these three critical initiatives or strategic initiatives for us. And if you may, I borrow this, Ron. Sorry, may I borrow your material? If you don't have a copy of this, we have staff going around that can give you a copy of UVU Vision 2030. And this helps us to clarify what we have to do in the next 10 years, in the next decade. Some things may change, but I think this is a pretty powerful guidepost for us, and it will help us in the coming years really know where to put our time, resources, and energy. Number one, very critical, enhance student success and accelerate completion of meaningful credentials. This is the holy grail, completion of meaningful credentials, and within a dual mission institution, that could be your one-year certificate, your two-year associate, your four-year bachelor's, and your master's degree. Everyone on this campus knows from my messaging how important the completion goal is. And we are learning from the University of Utah. Our people were there participating at the conference on completion. I use the word obsession not lightly, but very seriously. If you do not obsess about something, it doesn't get done. It doesn't inform the things that you do on a daily basis. And that is the challenge to me and my team, to the faculty, the staff, and the students too, because the students need to own their education. How else are we serving our students? We are serving them through mental health services. And I know that presidents are required to report to the Board of Regents how we are doing in mental health services. Our recommended ratio is 1 to 1,500, one full-time counselor. The ratio here at UVU today is 1 to 2,300, one full-time counselor to 2,300 students. But what we are finding on the one-on-one counseling, there's a 3 to 4 week wait right now, which is not so bad. It may sound not so good, but it's also not so bad given that this time in the fall is a high intensity stress, and so that the wait is only 3 to 4 weeks. For crisis counseling, there is no wait. And for group counseling, we have 8 counseling groups right now. There is room to accept new students, new people needing counseling in 6 of these 8 groups. In addition, we have partnered with the Jed Foundation. The Jed Foundation was started by a couple whose son Jed killed himself by suicide, and this is how they have created hope, new hope in their lives. And we are trying to become a Jed campus. So it's all the practice that they bring out to high schools and colleges is informed by peer-reviewed research, by best practice, and we are partnering with them in order to bring knowledge and practice and resources to this campus. We are also serving our students by remembering what my old boss, Vartan Gregorian, the president, former president of Brown University, former president of the New York Public Library, and currently the president of Carnegie Corporation of New York. I think what Vartan says in this slide is quite powerful. Sometimes we forget that in addition to the skills for jobs, we are really here to educate the whole person. What they become when they walk through our doors is very important. Are they more confident? Are they more resilient? Are they more gritty? And how we do this is to expose them to many types of experiences. We're very excited at the June this year, the Skills USA contest, everything from, you know, skills with your hands to leadership, that our students there won 9 medals and came out number two in the country. And they actually beat 39 states just in the number of medals for all of these skills. We also expose our students to good food, some of which you will eat today. Our chef, Yutana, there just won the Global Chefs Association contest. She's the champion in the Americas and gets to represent North and South America in the global competition in Russia that's happening this summer. Our students, this is a picture of Mars transit this week. How many of you saw Mars transiting across the sun? This only happens every 30 years. And I just happened to be outside and one of the science professors called me and a group of students, this is engaged learning, a line just spontaneously formed for all of us to see Mars. And Mars is a tiny little dot. We had one of my best friends in life, Kim Scott, who wrote the bestseller, Radical Candor. She spoke on campus. And I recently visited our interns in Washington, D.C. So engaged learning is another thing that we do in order to, that's the how of educating our students. Our NORDA Center for the Performing Arts is doing wonderfully. The Utah Symphony has now performed twice in their sixth performance season. We had Audra McDonald here recently. And then also a fabulous production of Sweeney Todd, making mincemeat literally out of your enemies. And I think the lesson is don't do it. Just a few more slides. This one we are very proud of. We are 11 years old as a university. We are open enrollment. We have to do many things in this complex mandate to educate students. And sometimes you feel, you know, are we really making progress? And this slide is remarkable because this is a measurement from IPEDS of first-time, full-time bachelor's degree-seeking students. And our jump last year by 7 percentage points is something huge. I know some people will say, well, why isn't it 88%? Well, we are working slowly but surely. But this is really something wonderful and something for us to celebrate. So thank you for your support in helping us track this progress. Our work is far from done. The outcome measure is a broader measure, not just the first time full time. And I showed this slide earlier at breakfast. The Holy Grail is our 45% completion by 2025. So our efforts will be focused on that, and that is reflected in Vision 2030. We are also working on making sure that our students continue to fill the 4-star and 5-star jobs here in the state of Utah, because we want to make sure that every dollar invested in UVU comes out as a dollar invested in a person who will stay in Utah. 76% of our students are still here 10 years out. We are enhancing our communications with industry, working with CEOs now directly in order to know what they need from us and what we need from them. And I think there's one final slide. College of Engineering, we continue to dream. This is the next thing we're going to be working on and go on. I guess that's it. So I hope that the takeaway from here is, I've been a president for 14 months. I hope that I am a little wiser maybe and not jaded and not cynical, and I'm not. So I love coming to UVU every single day. I love the team that I'm working with. I have a better appreciation and understanding for why we do what we do, and my team has a better understanding of how we're going to do this, hold ourselves accountable, and hopefully a year from now when you're back on this campus that we will have more good news to report. So thank you again, and enjoy the rest of our day here at UVU. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that great introduction to our meeting today. A lot of exciting things happening here. Before we move into the committee reports, we have a resolution that I'm going to read about one of our institutions that's had a particularly good month. And we deal with a lot of challenges. It's sometimes great to have some real, really significant achievements that we can celebrate. This is a resolution of recognition. Whereas the University of Utah was inducted into the prestigious Association of American Universities on November 6, 2019, and whereas this is a significant milestone both for the University of Utah and for the state of Utah, and whereas the Association of American Universities has recognized the most outstanding academic institutions in the nation for more than 100 years in order to promote and raise standards for university research and education, and whereas the membership criteria are based on the university's research funding, the proportion of faculty elected to the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, the impact of research and scholarship, and student outcomes. And whereas in 2019, the U celebrated a historic high of $547 million in sponsored project funding, covering a wide range of research activities. These prestigious awards from organizations such as the U.S. Department of Energy, National Institutes of Health, and National Science Foundation are supporting work in geothermal energy, cross-cutting interdisciplinary approaches to research that challenge existing paradigms, and effects of cannabinoids on pain management. They also are funding educational research programs with significant community engagement, such as the U.S. STEM Ambassador Program and the Genetic Science Learning Center's participation in the All of Us Research Program. And whereas on November 4th, 2019, the U announced a $150 million gift, the largest single project donation in its history, to establish the Huntsman Mental Health Institute. These gifts and awards are in addition to the ongoing support of the U from the Utah State Legislature. And whereas the U's focus on student success has led to an increased six-year graduation rate, which now sits at 70%, well above the national average for four-year schools. The rate has jumped 19 percentage points over the past decade, making it one of only two public higher education research institutions to achieve this success. And whereas this institution, this year's invitations into the AAU are the first since 2012, and whereas President Ruth V. Watkins has accepted an invitation to join the association along with the University of California, Santa Cruz, and Dartmouth College, the three new members bring the number of AAU institutions to 65. And whereas Utah students and community members will benefit from the research and education efforts of the University of Utah and its role as the state's flagship research institution. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Utah System of Higher Education Board of Regents, joined by the Commissioner of Higher Education and his staff, and institution presidents, faculty, staff, and students hereby extend sincere expressions of recognition and esteem for the University of Utah's achievement and excellence in the areas of research, scholarship, and education to further higher education in Utah, and for President Ruth V. Watkins' leadership guiding our flagship research institution to national prominence, dated this 15th day of November. Could we have a motion to accept that resolution? I have a motion, a second, from Regent Jones. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Congratulations. We're waiting to see what you do in December.
Yeah. Nice surprise. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, we will go to our committee reports, and we'll turn the time over to Regent Jones for the Academic and Student Affairs Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I might also congratulate the University of Utah, but all of our institutions as well. I think we could probably read a resolution for each one of them, as we are so proud of the institutions in our state. The Academic and Student Affairs Committee met October 11th, and we have had three goals in that committee, having to do with transfer, prior learning assessment, and state scholarship redesign. As far as the first one on transfer, the committee heard updates on the transfer and articulation projects, including nominations to the Regents Transfer Council. Those nominees are Regent Barnes and Moussa Fari, and progress toward the creation of the Utah Transfer Guide, which really will help our students in assistance and transparency, assistance in transferring from one institution to another. The commissioner's staff will provide an update on the transfer and articulation projects to the Committee of the Whole. The second goal that we had was having to do with the prior learning assessment. The updates on policy R-472 on the prior learning assessment projects, including the creation of the statewide prior learning committee, its members charged to create communications plans for their institutions, and their deadlines for reporting back to the commissioner's office. It also heard a report on the preparation of AP, CLEP, DSST, and IB tables for use in major committees to standardize credit for prior learning. The committee approved that draft policy 472, and we will take action on that in the afternoon on the Committee of the Whole. Our third goal was the state scholarship redesign. The committee discussed and approved the recommendations of the state scholarship task force, for the redesign of three existing state scholarship programs and voted to forward recommendations to the Committee of the Whole. So we will again take action on that this afternoon. And finally, the committee on that day was trained on its role in academic program approvals, particularly in regard to out-of-mission programs. The committee is forwarding these reports and will be approved by the Committee of the Whole this afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you very much. I think we don't need a motion on that, Jeff tells me, so we're good. We'll now hear from the Finance and Facilities Committee, Regent Clyde.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have met twice since our last meeting in October. On October 11th, we met and had some discussions. And then again this morning, we had another committee meeting for some things that have been brought by the universities that we didn't want to wait until the next meeting to be able to approve on. And so we went through some items, and these items are on the consent calendar. I found them once, and I've been looking again. If you'll notice, the consent calendar tab is pretty long, but in tab K, item E is where those different items that we discussed and approved to come to the Committee of the Whole and would be approved on the consent calendar. So the time we bring that up, if you have any questions on any of those, you'll have to bring them up when we do the consent calendar. We have been talking about three vital things. One is the growth funding task force, and we've had multiple discussions throughout the last several months on this. And one of the discussions on the formula was whether, as a part of the model, should we have the direct cost, instructional costs only, or should we do the full cost model? We had another discussion on this morning, and even though the commissioner's office had recommended that we just use the direct instructional costs only, we decided that maybe we wouldn't take the full cost because some of those are incremental type costs on a fixed cost basis. But there are some things that cannot be ignored when it comes to when you have growth within your institution and that is more than just the instructional. And so the original, if you did the direct instructional costs only, that would be $3.3 million. If you did the full cost, what was the full cost? $6.2 million. And so what we decided is to pull some of that direct full cost out, some of the administration, some of the building facilities maintenance. And so we said that we need to keep advisors. I can't remember everything that we had on that. Advisors, all of the academic part of that, some of the mental health and those kinds of things. And so we actually came back with a number, Rich just reported to me, of $3.9 million, which would be kind of what we recommend. So the recommendation of the committee was to discuss that further in the Committee of the Whole, so whether or not we want to do that, Mr. Chairman, or not. Oh, later this afternoon, I think we have that as one of our items to discuss, don't we? Okay, so the next item was develop tuition strategy. And the tuition strategy, basically we contracted with KMC Gardner Policy Institute to develop some numbers for us. Number one, system-wide tuition and state aid policies. Number two, impacts of non-residents and students. And number three, how to measure college affordability. And so they have finalized this report, have presented it to the Committee of the Whole in October, and so because of the fullness of today's schedule, we're recommending that we have some time to discuss that in the January 2020 meeting. So that's the recommendation, is that we wait until then to to discuss this in a little further. Hopefully you'll have a chance to review and look over some of these facts and figures that was provided to us by the Institute, and you'll be able to have some input on that. The third thing that we've talked about was the performance funding modeling. And one of the things that we wanted to look at is performance funding formula, how it might be updated to include opportunity gap among Utah's underserved population. And so we discussed this somewhat in our October meeting, and the recommendation that we came up with was this was a informational item. Oh, let's just a minute. Oh, yeah, turn over the page here. That we would postpone the performance funding changes or recommendations until we understand what the legislature, what their intent was. And so we wait through the legislative session to see what they're thinking in this area and how they're looking at it. And then we would come back and revisit that and try to build some formulas that would be based on how they would like to see that take place. So those are kind of the three things we're working on. There's another of other miscellaneous committee items that were on the report in your materials that everyone could hopefully had a chance to review. So that's my report.
Thank you very much. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much, Regent Clyde. We'll now hear from Regent Anderson on the Workforce Access and Advocacy Committee.
Great. Our committee has been busy the last couple of months, and we have met twice since our last Board of Regents meeting. Several of us attended the dual summit.
Get that closer to your mouth.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better? Okay. We've been busy, and I wanted to just mention that several of our committee attended the dual summit conference that was hosted by our dual mission summit that was hosted by our dual mission universities, and it was very, very well done, and it was very informative to us, and we want to congratulate them on that terrific program and encourage that summit continued because it is so worthwhile. In addition, in terms of yesterday we had the K-20 summit that our great associate commissioners Melanie Heath and Carrie Main put together, and it was the first time that we brought together the members of USHE, both trustees and regents, the State Board of Education, and the UTEC colleges, and it was a terrific conference, and we're going to have a full report in the Committee of the Whole, so I will just leave it at that. Several of our items on the Committee of the Whole are our committee report, so our committee report will really be taken up at the Committee of the Whole. And so pay attention when we get to tab B and C, and we appreciate very much the great effort that's going forth to align our goals with the workforce and making access and advocacy even better. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. any questions, Regent Anderson? All right, we appreciate the report. Let's see, we're going to turn the time over to Assistant Commissioner Melanie Heath to talk about the K-20 summit.
Yeah. Great, thank you. And I would like to turn the time over to Nicole Batt, who's the director of the Utah College Advising Corps and has been instrumental in expanding this program from 12 high schools to 34 high schools this fall. With our legislative request, we're hoping to expand the program to 90 high schools across the state, from Cache Valley to Uinta Basin and everywhere in between. So I'll turn the time over to Nicole. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm excited to tell you about what we've been doing and what we plan to do as we move through the year. I wanted to start by just sharing some research on Utah students and parents. So 86% of Utah students and parents believe that college is more important today than it was 10 years ago. However, only 50% know where to find information about scholarships and grants, and only 50% believe college is accessible for everybody in Utah, which is where we come in. As most of you know, and I'm just going to give you a quick summary, the Utah College Advising Corps and the College Access Advisors are recent college graduates. They work full-time, 40 hours a week, physically in one high school, doing all things college-related with the seniors. So they're doing test prep and test ACT registrations if seniors want to retake the ACT their senior year, college applications, financial aid, scholarships. They're connecting them to campuses for whatever institution they decide to go to, and really creating a college-going culture in that school. Our program is very data-driven and outcome-focused. We have a new database that allows us to collect a lot of meaningful data around what the advisors are doing to help us make decisions about the program. We're collecting FAFSA progress and completions, college applications and college acceptances, scholarship applications and awards. We're collecting the number of one-on-one meetings that the advisors are having with students, including the type of meeting and what was discussed during that meeting. And we're collecting the number of engagements with parents and families. That's something we're really focused on this year, as we know that that is something that's really going to help us move the needle on getting students to college. And then we're also collecting additional information, including their GPA and ACT. So I want to talk to you about the three phases of the expansion. So we're currently in phase one. As Melanie said, last year we were in 12 high schools, 11 in the Salt Lake Valley, one in St. George. And now we are in 34 high schools. And that phase one came at a cost of $1 million. Phase two, which would begin fall of 2020, would increase us by 56 high schools for a total of 90 at $3 million. And then finally, phase three would begin fall of 2021, which would put us at over 150 high schools for a total program cost of $7 million. So this year's expansion happened in four different regions. We are in Salt Lake County in 12 high schools, 8 in the Weber-Davis County, 7 in Utah County, and 7 in Washington County. And here are our advisors this year. As you can see, we're in 11 school districts, including Salt Lake City, Granite, Canyons, Jordan, Washington, Weber, Davis, Ogden, Alpine, Provo, and Nebo. In order to manage the advisors on this expansion, we've also hired regional coordinators to oversee the work of the advisors in the different regions. This year, we have 5 program staff, 4 regional coordinators, and those coordinators are housed at Dixie State University, Utah Valley University, Weber State University, and the University of Utah. For the next phase of the expansion, we anticipate that we'll have a regional coordinator at every USHE institution and several of the UTEC institutions. I also wanted to take a moment to talk to you about what our training looked like this year. So we did our training at USHE, bringing in experts in their field from UHEA, Utah Futures, USHE staff, training the advisors on everything they need to know to be able to do their job. And an important component of our training is taking the advisors on a road trip to actually get boots on the ground at all of your institutions, meeting the staff there, and getting a feel for the school as they're having these conversations with students. We were able to visit all of the USHE institutions and several of the UTEC institutions, and here are some of the pictures from our road trips. I wanted to talk to you also about some of the goals for our program. So we give a lot of tasks to the advisors. We ask them to do a lot in their school, and we've set some pretty big goals this year. So we're collecting the ACT scores from the entire senior class. We anticipate that as a program, 45% of our seniors will complete the FAFSA this year, which is about a 5% increase over last year. We're hoping that 77% of our seniors complete one or more college applications and 26 complete 3 or more. We are hoping to have 70% meet one-on-one with 70% of our senior class and have meaningful interactions with about 30% of the parents in our high schools. For the seniors. And then have the advisors assist with FAFSA for about 55% of the senior class. As you can see, we've set goals, school level goals. All of those goals roll up into the bigger goals, but we have to adjust for class size and then looking at where they were last year with the available data. And really quickly, I just wanted to show you what we're thinking for phase two. So on the left-hand side, you'll see the schools that we're currently in. And on the right side, you'll see the schools that we anticipate going into starting fall of next year. These are tentative, and we've just started conversations with districts and schools. And then before I end and take a couple of questions, I just wanted to share with you a story that one of the advisors received an email from a student, and I thought it was really important. And I'm also going to direct you to look at the story that's on your handout, which is different. I won't read it right now, but it's also really amazing to hear about the good work that the advisors are doing. So I'm just going to quickly read this email. Hi, advisor. I want to start by saying thank you. Despite not having my full name, you still managed to find me and contact me. I was avoiding our conversation because I was embarrassed. I was confused, but you changed that because you are opening doors for me that I never knew existed. Thank you for helping me see my future clear and being on the right path. My parents are my motivation, and now you are too. Thank you. I'm happy to take questions.
Any questions? Regent Church.
Yeah, so our training is very student-led, so our initial conversations with students are just about what they're thinking, where they're at in life, what their goals are, and just hearing what they are interested in. We don't train to direct to a student to one institution. We're really looking at best fit. So it's why we value getting the advisors to all of the different institutions. We're constantly connecting them. Having the coordinators be housed at the different institutions also means that across the state, advisors are getting updated information from all of the different institutions. And also, the UTech schools are a great option for a lot of our students, which is why we're really cultivating that partnership with those schools to make sure that we are giving all of the good information that that they have to the students that we work with.
Thank you. Any other questions? Regent Wright.
As you've expanded the program, what are some of the challenges that you didn't expect, and what have been some of the hurdles as far as expansion? Because, you know, as a board, we recommended expanding this statewide, and so as we roll it out incrementally, what are some of the things that you've encountered that we can be more aware of as we move forward?
I want to knock on wood. It's actually been pretty smooth, to be totally honest. A couple of bumps around making sure we had enough applicants, but the institutions were so great about getting that application out to their recent college graduates. And the school partners have been amazing. We were able to fill all of the spots before our summer training, so we didn't have any empty schools when we started the beginning of the year. So it's really gone very smooth. I think the way that we structured the program to have that middle layer of management and to have those coordinators near the schools, being able to go out and help the advisors has been really helpful. So I don't wish I had more things to tell you, but I think we went into this very, very well aware of some of the challenges we were going to come up against and prepared for those. And to be totally honest, it's been smooth sailing. And I'm going to find some wood to knock on after this.
Can you speak to how, when an advisor is in the school, how do they become known to the students? Are they being proactive? Is it advertised that you can meet with advisor if you go to room 22 or what? How is that happening that these connections actually get made? And how proactive are we being at initiating that?
That's a great question. So, the advisors are doing everything. So the school districts give us class rosters for the entire senior class, and we have the ability in most schools to call students out of non-core classes. So We're going through those rosters. We're calling students down. We're meeting them at lunch. We're grabbing them in the hallway in between classes. The advisors are presenting at assemblies. They're presenting on the TV. Some of them are going to football games and tabling. The counselors are walking students into their office. They're doing presentations, usually in the English classes, around what's coming up. They're holding FAFSA nights. To engage parents, we're calling parents. We're going and just old school and calling parents for the entire senior class, leaving voicemails, letting them know who we are and what we're doing and what's coming up. So it looks a little different in every school. It just sort of depends what the school wants from this partnership, but the advisors are out there really doing their best to get in front of all of the students.
Good. Other questions? Yes.
Kind of follow up on that, is there a way in which the advisors are like specifically engaging with students who would maybe not normally be interested in attending college, like our first gen students maybe?
Oh, there it is. One of the things that we're doing when we're having that first meeting, so we're trying to reach about 70% of the senior class. And one of the things we're doing in that first meeting is just letting the student talk about who they are, what they want, what they need. And then we're really intentionally following up with the students who are first generation, who are historically underrepresented in higher ed, to make sure that we're following up with them on all of the milestones that they would need to complete that college application process and the financial aid process, and then connecting them to first-year programs at whatever institution they choose, academic advisors at whatever institution they choose, so that they're sort of being guided along the way, especially those that need a little bit more help.
Any other questions? Yes, Regent Prince.
It's an amazing program. You listed program costs of $7 million once it's fully rolled out. Who's paying that? Is that a legislative appropriation, or how, where does that come from?
Yes. it would be a legislative funding by the time we reach the full $7
million.
Correct.
Yeah, let me add a little bit of clarity to that. She's absolutely correct. So we used $1 million of internal funds this last year that are only going to be one-time funds. That was kind of a savings account that had been saved up that the Regents approved to use that $1 million. We got a $3 million request in this year, the legislature, which looks very promising after visiting with leadership. And then there'll be another $3 million request next year to get us to the end of that. But they will be ongoing funds.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Spectacular work that you're all doing. We really appreciate it. Okay, we're actually going to turn the time now over to Vice Chair Barnes to talk about the K-20 Summit. I got my order reversed here, so.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Well, I'm excited to be talking about this. For those of you who were at the summit yesterday, you know what an amazing event it was. It was the first time we've been able to have the three educational boards in Utah together, and the first time they've come away with a resolution, which I'll read in just a moment. So a great opportunity, and it was nice that we celebrated the 50th year of the Board of Regents in a way that's so productive and forward thinking and what we're trying to accomplish and where we're trying to go. I really loved the quote that Lieutenant Governor Cox said, that this might be the most important meeting we've held in education in a long time, and I would agree with that. So with that, I'll read the resolution. It, whereas college and career readiness is a shared stewardship of public state education entities, and whereas all Utahns should have access to high quality college and career opportunities, and whereas there are significant opportunity gaps in Utah for underrepresented students and families, and whereas, according to the Utah System of Higher Education report, Utah's growing opportunity gap, if these gaps persist, the state of Utah will miss out on nearly 300,000 degrees and certificates by the year 2065. With each of those individuals foregoing substantial annual income, translating to an economic impact for the state nearing billions of dollars,
And whereas ensuring all Utahns have access to higher education, post-secondary education, is necessary for the economic success of the state and the well-being of its citizens. Therefore, be it resolved that the Utah State Board of Education, the Utah System of Technical Colleges Board of Trustees, and the Utah System of Higher Education Board of Regents direct their respective chief executives to establish and align goals and resources that achieve the following outcomes. Encourage students to set and achieve post-secondary goals that best help them succeed in their future workforce and educational endeavors. Provide a college access advisor for every Utah high school student to help them successfully access information about potential career pathways and available post-secondary educational options in Utah. Maintain a statewide authoritative online platform to guide K-12 students and returning adults in potential career pathways and available post-secondary education options in Utah. Reprioritize state dollars to improve access to post-secondary education options, especially for underrepresented populations that lead to high demand, high wage, or high skill career options in Utah. Dated this, the 15th day of November, 2019. This is exceptional work. I'm so pleased of all those who've come together to make this recommendation. And I wanted to give kudos to all the partners, particularly the staff, really driven and facilitated. Thank you. I know this has been a heavy lift in bringing people together, but I think this changes the trajectory of Utah. So with that, that's the resolution.
Very good. Do we have a motion? Motion, second from Regent Dotta. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Okay. We're going to turn the time, some time over to Interim Commissioner Wolstenholme to talk about the NSHEM's report.
Okay, while I'm setting the stage for this, if you can pull up your documents, you may want to look at tab D in your documents. As you know, the education study has been going on, and this last month we had an opportunity to meet with the committee, which from this board we have Regent Gibson, Regent Anderson, myself, President Watkins, President Cockett, President Williams, and President Hufflin, are the presidents that represent on that committee. Before I get going, I'd like to turn the time over to anybody that attended that last meeting to kind of get their input and their thoughts, and then I want to talk about the position paper that is in your packets. Does anybody have any comments or thoughts from the last committee meeting before we move forward? That's kind of about what we got out of the meeting, right? Since that time, we've had an opportunity with Chair Simmons and Vice Chair Barnes and Chair Steve Moore and Vice Chair Aaron Osmond from the trustees of the tech colleges to meet with the leadership chairs of that committee, which is Speaker Wilson as well as Senator Milliner, and to really talk about what option they're looking at, what's the best option for the possibility of the state, and what we've determined is really what they're going to look at this year. We think they're going to look at this year is just the governance structure. As you remember in the MCHAMS report, they talked a lot about Utah County, what should happen there. In the last committee meeting, it was decided, I think it was a wise decision from Speaker Wilson, to put that on hold and really talk about the governance, what the governance should look like moving forward, and how can we best be suited to lead education moving forward. So as we did that, one of the things during those discussions, as we met with the committee chairs, is we determined that all of us was not on the same page with even the way that we would be presenting it back to our respective bodies, from the trustees, the regents, even with the commissioner's offices to do that. So it was recommended that we put together a position paper, and that's what you'll see in tab D, of really what option three is, and that kind of is where everybody's leaning toward, is option three of the three different options that was presented by MCHEMS. And so what we did was try to take a shot at putting together a position statement, both from the Board of Trustees as well as the Board of Regents, of what option three really looks like. One of the biggest points of clarification we need to make in option three with several of you, and I can see where you got that, felt like there was a lot of layers of leadership within that. So what we did is we tried to put together a new graph right below the NCHEMs. The first graph that you see on that report was from the NCHEM folks with all the different dotted lines. We tried to simplify that graph in the position statement to show that the commissioner's office would really be set up no different than it is now, with the commissioner and then the associate commissioners that oversee those different areas. So the presidents wouldn't be reporting both. If for those individuals like, let's say President Cockett, for example, that does both career and technical education in Eastern Utah, as well as the academic side throughout the rest of the state, as well as Eastern Utah, she wouldn't be reporting up to two different people, from the commissioner as the and also the associate commissioner, or in this case, the vice chancellor. In fact, they don't even report to the chancellor, they report directly to the board. We just help oversee and help the presidents do what they need to do to be successful. So that's the difference there. So those vice chancellors would be doing nothing more than to convening to help to do exactly what our associate commissioner is doing today. So there really is another additional layer of leadership that we're seeing there. The other thing that we tried to point out in here is there was some confusion around, especially with the tech colleges, that there would still be a tech board with inside the governing board. And so we tried to really clarify that. Option three really says it's one board appointed by the governor. And obviously we put in here we want geographic location of that, as well as certain industries that it would be represented on that governing board moving forward. So that's pretty much what this position statement is. And I know some of you wanted to have more conversation around that. That's why I put it on the agenda today. But hopefully the position statement clears it up. So as they talk about it next week in their board meeting, as well as what discussion we have today, it's a little bit clearer of what option three really is before the legislature moves forward. So with that, I'll just open it up for questions or comments or concerns. President Williams.
Is there a place where we should clarify the role of trustees? I know that's not in here, because right now there's some confusion to that. Would it be beneficial to say not only here's the governance for the entire system, but this is the role that we're recommending?
So one of the things that we know we've got to get a lot more detailed in is when it goes into statute, right? So this was basically to just look at the Board of Regents or whatever they call the new board going forward, or what that structure would look like, but knowing that all that's going to have to be addressed as we go to the next step for sure. President Hoffman.
So I'm just looking at the section under the governing body and how they might be represented. And I understand that, I guess the way I read it, it looks like you're coming from industry experts. In the first commission report, they talked about folks that were familiar with higher education and had some expertise in higher education without, this is tricky, but without allegiance to one particular institution. And I worry that in this language, higher education knowledge isn't situated at all. And I think we benefit from trustees who've been at a university setting and college setting and then moved into the Regents. They have an understanding of the academy, they have an understanding of the finance. So I guess I would just lobby for language there, including some kind of higher ed connection or background or experience, not necessarily professionally, but in their service, perhaps.
We can definitely add that in. That's definitely something we can do.
Commissioner?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm a bit of a maverick, so I'm going to just give my opinion, and it probably isn't going to matter anyway, but I feel like what should happen is I feel like that UTEC should become a ninth institution under the existing system that we have, and that the president of that be on an equal status with the presidents of the other universities and colleges, and that each of the universities or colleges already in the UC system that have technical training, of which they provide 70% of the technical training in the state, have a vice president over technical training, and the president of UTEC and those vice presidents would get together and work on the technical training the CTE training within the state, and then obviously you have your academic vice presidents that would work on the academic side of what should happen in the state. And then I feel like at the level, the governing level, I think there should be three committees. I think there should be an academic committee that works on the academic side. I think there should be a technical CTE committee that would work on the technical training and be on an equal status with the academic training. And then there would be the continued finance and facilities committee. And that's how the governing body, whether it be the regents or whether they want to modify the regents or whatever. But quite frankly, I think this would be a lot better model than what they're doing. And it's probably too far, the train's probably pulled out of the station too far down the road, but I just had to give you my 2 cents. That's how I feel it ought to be organized.
I think that point of view, absolutely, we can certainly pass that along too, right? Because I don't think the cement is set yet. And I think anybody with
I think somehow we need to elevate technical training to be a very important part of our education system. And I feel like that the technical training people have always felt like that they're kind of second-class citizens. And I think that we can do that in that regard. But to take the technical, the UTEC, which I don't know how many students are in the UTEC, as opposed to how many students are in the higher education system right now, the 8 colleges and universities, and kind of put them on an equal status, that just doesn't make sense to me at all. Plus the fact that the colleges and universities are providing 70% of the technical training right now, and I don't know, I mean, we've got some dotted line here that make it all seem to make sense in that, but I just think that would be a really good model, and it would give us a chance to get the technical training to a higher level than we have now and put a separate emphasis by having within the governing body, and you could still have whether you call it a chancellor or whatever you call it, you could still have one person in the higher ed office work on technical training, and you have one person work with the academic on the academic training. But in that regard, I just think that would be a really good model. And if you put a vice president at the particular institutions that have technical training, that would elevate that within that institution and help that right along with your vice president of academics or your provost or whatever. If you had a separate person that was over technical training, that would elevate that to a new level that we've never had before and would help us within the institutions that we already have be able to concentrate on that technical training. It would elevate UTEC to be equal with the other institutions we have in the state and give them the prestige and the necessary that they need to have. And I really think we could make that model work. But that's just my opinion. And I don't know that much, but I have a lot of people that work in the technical area in the business I work in every year.
President Wyatt.
You're getting a lot of nods over in this corner. We all think this sounds like a really good strategy to look at.
President Cockett.
I actually would like to counter by saying I think your proposal is what is there, except you've called the vice chancellor for Tech Ed a president, as far as I can tell, because...
Well, UTEC would continue to exist. It has a president now. It would continue to... I mean, like, for example, we have the president of Utah State. You have multiple campuses around the state. UTEC would be one of our colleges, as you say, technical college. And it would have multiple campuses around the state like it does right now.
Where does my vice president come in and interact
exactly
with that president?
Well, I mean, you would have a vice president over technical. The president, rather than working with the other presidents when it comes to academic training, they would work all together in the technical training area in that.
So my vice president would be on some kind of council with this president of the tech college.
Right, absolutely.
Okay.
And I would think that President Huffkelin would want to be pretty involved because she provides a lot of technical training in our state. So I would say at Salt Lake Community College, they would definitely want to be very heavily involved. But probably at Utah State, you'd probably have your vice president work with the technical training.
So, but doesn't it, in some sense, diminish the representation of the UTEC system to a single voice, whereas this has each tech college there as a voice?
I don't understand why.
Well,
having a president of each one of your campuses around state. Why would we do that?
Well, that's at the heart of it. Either we have each tech college represented, or we only have one representation for the tech college.
So some unique things happened 4 or 5 years ago in statute. Spencer could probably tell us exactly what year it was. But it's no longer just one campus of UTEC. There's 8 individualized campuses across the system. Just like University of Utah, just like Utah State University, just like Dixie State. There's 8, so it would have to be changed in statute, and I get all this would have to be changed in statute, but they would have to go back to one, which I'm not sure we could get there. I totally understand what you're saying.
Well, I'm not sure we can get to what I'm proposing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it makes sense to me, and you would still have a board of trustees that would be the board of trustees of UTEC, and you have an existing board of trustees. They would do that just like there's a board of trustees of UVU, of Utah State, and I don't know. Just makes common sense to me, but politics doesn't always make common sense.
Yes.
I would also like to get my minority opinion on record. I agree with Regent Clyde that UTEC system should exist as an independent system. We have 2 systems. They are working, not 100%. We have to amend them to address the needs of new education environment that we have. However, these systems have worked for the state. Given that, we are revamping a whole system based on a consultant's report that was done over a period of a year. Consultants have a way of writing reports that give the conclusions that they were commissioned to write, not necessarily what is best for the state. I looked at the consultants. I'm not very impressed with the backgrounds. We have a lot more qualified leaders of our institutions in the state today, and I think they are more than capable and they are more than qualified to address the needs of higher ed. As Regent Clyde said, UTEC system addresses needs of a very different diaspora than the UC system, and I think that is how it should be. Again, I will voice my opinion that they should exist independently and they should address the needs of 2 different sets of students. We have systems where we still have issues that we are addressing by combining 19 institutions under one umbrella. Are we hoping that all the problems will go away? We have not addressed our transfer issues yet. We have not addressed a common app amongst 8 institutions. We have other issues of facilities that we need to address, and these are very unique to the higher system of education. Similarly, I'm sure the UTEC system has its own set of issues. We are creating this behemoth organization under one governance. How is that governing body going to address all these issues? We struggle with 8. What is that governing body going to do with 19? With very different set of issues across the board. So that's my opinion. And like you said, politics doesn't make sense. But we are in this environment and, you know, I just want to be on record that report from a consulting group led by somebody who was vice president at Western Governors University, which is not even a real university as compared to the institutions that we have. And we as a group have the responsibility to represent. I find it very offensive.
I mean, this is another model that I think would be even a better model, but even be harder. I personally think that each of the technical colleges should attach to the nearest college or university, and like Bridgerland would be a campus of Utah State, Davis Technology would be a campus of Weber State, Mountainland Technology would be a campus of UBU. I mean, tell me what the difference is of having diesel mechanics at Mountainland Technology and having auto body at UBU. Those are the same type of student. Why can UBU have an auto body system, but when we do diesel mechanics, we do it at Mountainland Technology? I mean, why don't we get it all together and make it work all together as one system? I mean, that to me, that would be the ultimate thing to do, but I think politically it would probably be harder than the other one I proposed.
I think it's helpful to remember.
I think President Wyatt has already started that by just doing some partnerships back and forth between the technology school there and you've allowed credit to take place. And I don't know why we can't give credit for technology classes just like we give credit for academic classes. I just don't get why some is credit and some's not credit. I don't know.
We've created a merger without a merger. But back to this question about two systems, I think it's really important for us to remember that there are 11 counties in Utah that don't have a UTEC campus in them. We are the UTEC campus. So to have two systems, one higher ed and one tech, where the higher ed is the tech system in 11 of 29 counties, which constitutes about half of the state's population, delivering 70% of the technical training, as has been said, that's the confusion. If you had all of the tech in one system and all the higher ed in another system, you could make an argument that they ought to be separate. But where we're delivering more than half of the tech training, it makes no sense. We go to the legislature and say, we need money for technical training, and they think they're giving it to us because they're giving it to the tech system. So they're giving money to the tech system, which is serving 18 counties, and they're not giving it to our institutions that are serving 11 counties. It's really confusing. But bringing the two together is going to resolve that confusion. So I'm super positive about this whole.
Well, I want to go on record saying that there's some miscommunication. We do not serve 70% of technical education. It's how we have always counted technical education in the Board of Regents and in the office. But when you separate out apple for apple what a tech college is doing and what we're doing, it's not 70%. We don't know what that number is because we've clumped it all together. So in AAS, anything that's included in AAS, whether it's Gen Ed, rather whatever it is being counted as general education because the way Perkin funding is there. Now we're doing a lot, but I don't want to go on record saying we're doing 70% when that's not accurate because we haven't, in my office, accounted for technical education apples to apples against the tech colleges. So I want to be careful that we don't get that out there.
Because I've been here for 7 or 8 years now.
Well,
I've heard that 70% for that amount of time, so tell us what it is.
Well, I'd like to throw that back at you, Regent, and say I wish we would have been able to account for that in the office by accounting for technical education the way it should have been counted for during that time.
What we do know is that 11 of the counties, all technical training is being done by our system. So we've got two systems managing
correct.
The exact same training in different regions.
I do want to respond. President Wyatt, that is the mission of your institution, and you are doing a really fantastic job of that. by revamping everything, we are fixing something that is working. That is my concern, that we are fixing what is not broke. You are doing a really good job in your institution, in your counties that you are serving, and that is your institution's mission. And like I said, you've done a fantastic job. So what are we trying to achieve here? Another comment that I heard was, it is a system that exists, the infrastructure exists, we are just combining it. It's the same old with a new name. That is not the goal of revamping a system. If we are going to go with same old, we might as well not do anything.
So I, again, as a relatively new to the area of technical education, I actually really welcome a formal relationship with the tech colleges. And so I look forward to having them at the same table as where I am when I'm dealing with technical education, just as I enjoy the relationship I have with the UCHI presidents when we're talking about similar programs as well. So somehow, you know, I'd like to have more drivers on things like transfer, articulation, you know, et cetera. As we've said many, many times, students and their families don't understand our system. And one of the big interesting things is we call them tech colleges, and yet they can't get college degree there. They get certificates. So it's going to be a lot of work, but bringing them together, we can do internal processes, I think, that will improve the process externally. It will absolutely complicate our lives, though, doing it. But I really think for long-term post-secondary education in Utah, one system is better than two. That's my personal view.
I might just add, I think we're trying to, I keep asking myself from a student's point of view, and it really builds on what President Cockett is saying. I think we have a real need in this state to try to clarify what paths look like, and not only what the path looks like, to make sure that we're removing as many roadblocks in terms of articulation, and clearly there's a lot of work to be done even within our own system today, but beyond that there's a need to figure out how technical education generally integrates with the academic education that, and I really like the quote we saw from
Vartan Gregorian.
Yeah, from President Gregorian. This isn't an either or. We've got we're increasingly living in a society where you need sort of both, and there are threads of all of this that need to be available to students. And I think there are probably a lot of different ways you could skin the cat in terms of, you know, organizational structure. I do think we have probably a kind of a seminal opportunity to work with the legislature to create something that is that has some of our imprint on it, and working together with UTEC to try to get the consensus, which is reflected in the memorandum that's before you. But I think we ought to probably actually, you know, formally take a vote before we sign this and send it on, recognizing that we're going to have some divergent points of view, but I think this is important enough that we probably want to see if there's support for this memorandum, or if or whether we need to go back to the drawing board, understanding that time is very limited. Any other thoughts about that before we see if there's? Yes.
I just might want to support that and just maybe give a little historical about how we've come to this point, because we've certainly done work as on the Yushi system, maybe a little more work than our UTech folks. We're a little ahead on that. And we have met with the presidents and leadership, with Senator Milner and Speaker Wilson, with our presidents, and then on another occasion met with the UTech presidents. We've had meetings amongst ourselves and other conversations with the leadership, whether it was just us, the Yushi leadership and commissioner, with the UTech leadership and commissioner. And it hasn't been a light lift to get to this point. So I feel like we've done a lot of the work to get this and to get the compromise. But we also have felt like it gives us a lot of clout going into the legislators, that we are coming together. This is not something we chose to do. This is something that's happening, and we are just trying to unite and navigate it with that strategy. And so I'm really proud of the work that's been done. It's not perfect, but we kind of are here now, and I would agree that it's probably time to take a vote and to move forward this. The session's coming quick.
Yep. Yes, Regent Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would this be a vote in favor of a concept?
I think it would probably be a vote to approve the content of the memorandum that we're going to submit on behalf of Yushi, together with UTech, so that, because we're signatories to it, and what I don't want to do is to get in the middle of a legislative session and have it said that, well, this doesn't really reflect the view of the Board of Regents. So I think and modifying this is tricky, because it's also would require modification by our UTech partners and trustees. So that's,
I guess, to follow up on my own question and answer, but if it's something in concrete, it can be malleable, is what you're saying.
I clearly think that as this goes through the legislative process, absolutely this is going to be malleable. I think this is an attempt, a good faith attempt on the part of Yushi and UTech, to say that we're really trying to work together to find common ground to accommodate what I think the legislature is wanting to do. And what we think, as we've talked about it, I think what we've felt makes actually a lot of sense, and again, from a student's point of view, in trying to simplify to clarify the options that are open to them, and to avoid duplication, which is starting to take place. We talked about, you know, the situation in St. George, for example, where, I mean, we have duplications in spending that are going on that, as taxpayers, we shouldn't want to see happen. So I having unified governance, I think our view has been that was going to be efficient for taxpayers and helpful to students. So.
And for President Williams, I see him shaking his head. That's not at BSU, it's at the Tech High School, and with the UTech campus, as was brought up by Chair Moore.
Quick question, just in terms of process, because I could not find this document in the tab A or the 003 in the agenda that was circulated. Do we still have time to make any comments? Or just, I guess, clarifying Pat Jones's question, is this a vote to pass this document now as the position of the regents, or is there a chance to comment on this? I see that it's signed already. There are three signatures. I simply couldn't find it in the earlier material circulated.
It's in process, but this hasn't been submitted to anybody, so this isn't. Okay. It's subject to this conversation.
And UTech will have the same conversation next week at their board meeting.
Okay. If someone were to be asked today, what are the three problems we are solving for that this position paper from the Board of Regents responds to, and what is that response? Is that a fair question to ask?
Yeah, I think, well, and we might have those who have been serving on the commission who've kind of been wrestling with this. If you have any thoughts about
that. So, well, I see one problem as equal treatment of techs and Yushi. Is that fair?
I think that's right.
I viewed it as integration, moving post-secondary education forward. Whatever our percentage is that we're delivering tech ed through Yushi, and what's happening over in the tech colleges is totally disconnected. That's how I view. I'm not on any, the only time that I meet with Bridgerland is K through 16 Alliance, and when we submit strategic workforce initiative grants. I have no other contact with them. So it really was a way to integrate, I saw, across post-secondary education in Utah.
And I would just echo that. Yeah. I think the opportunity to bring people together with a post-secondary mission with the good of students in mind. There's a lot of wise comments that have been made. I think Regent Clyde is making a lot of good points. The step to get there is the one that's on the table.
Yes.
And hopefully that is what opens the door to get to the next step down the road.
I think including just more equitable state funding arrangements for technical education, because they vary quite a lot, and sometimes I think to the detriment of what's happening within institutions like yours. So that's one of the opportunities. President Huffman.
I would add to that, in addition to the integration and getting the systems together, that there was also a big interest in anticipating the growth. And how could we accommodate the growth going forward as a state, which is why some of the other things, the Utah County conversation, et cetera, which has been shelved, but that was driven by some of that growth conversation. But I just want to point out, because I think this is problematic, in the proposed new org chart, Commissioner, the colors, if you're looking at this, technical college is in green, and right below it, it talks about technical education. Technical colleges do not offer AAS degrees. All of the technical colleges give non-credit. Mm-hmm. That is a really important point. And if you look at this and you don't know better, you would assume that I would assume the technical colleges are offering AAS degrees, and they cannot. So I think we have to make clear that the technical colleges are offering non-credit certificates, and that the technical education under, I have a problem with academic colleges as a heading too, because we do technical, I mean, anyway, that just seems so artificial to pull those things apart. But the technical education that we offer, AAS degrees and above, those are credit-based programs. So I just think that is an important piece, because that speaks to the articulation concerns that President Kaka talked about. It speaks to a lot of the separation that's existed before, and the funding differentials and all of that.
Yeah, and the reason it was put there, and we can change that, the reason it was put there is because we want to be able to stack those technical certificates that they're providing at the tech colleges into an AAS degree with a general education. So you can see it's not connected up to the technical colleges, it's connected over to that committee so that we can learn how to stack those tech colleges certificates into the AAS degree. But I understand what you're saying, we can make that change, but that's what the intent and the purpose of that line was.
So I actually have a problem with that graph as well, in that you don't have an orange line to SUU and USU.
Well, the orange line above that, that's the MCHEMS. That's exactly what came out of the MCHEMS report. It's the one down below it, yeah. President, the word.
Yeah, I know, but the one above.
Yeah, totally, yep.
The one above it, too.
That was the NCHEMS chart. I'm not taking any credit for that one.
May I say something? I find it amusing that we are having trouble defining what problem we are trying to solve here. That kind of beats the purpose of the whole position paper. I think maybe we should take a step back and say that, ask the legislature, set the vision. First set the vision, set the goal, what they want to achieve, then let's talk about governance and the governance structure. this doesn't make sense that we are putting a governance structure together. We don't know what problem we are trying to solve. We don't know how it's going to be. I don't know what we are trying to accomplish here.
Well, I think
we are trying to create centers of excellence in our education institutions. We are not looking for mediocrity and trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, but that's what it's starting to feel like.
Thank you. Regent Stoddard?
I know there's been a lot of heavy lifting to get it to this point, and the discussion, what Regent Clyde had talked about, made some valid points, and there were some interest, apparently, from what I was seeing around the group. If that can be incorporated, or some portion of that, should that be incorporated before the vote? Because once the vote is taken, I'm guessing that that will be difficult to go back around then and say, we approve that, but we didn't have a chance to really flesh out everything that we wanted in that report, but here it is now. I'm just wondering what would be the best way to go from this point so that we have a consensus to put our best voice forward to make the changes that are best for the whole system.
Do you have any thoughts about that?
We definitely don't need to take a vote today, but I think within the next 2 or 3 weeks, we need to have a pretty solid consensus of where this group wants to go, because legislators are going regardless. I'd like to be able to have some input on where we're going and how we should impact this. And if we're fragmented, they're just going to move forward. I would like to be able to have a consensus with the group, and it doesn't have to be this, but somehow come to a consensus of, all right, this is where we think education can go. And then we also remember, then we've also got to get the Board of Trustees on board as well to be able to bring two groups together, and it's very difficult to do. And so we won't be able to wait till the next meeting to do that. So if we want to circulate this around and get some input and some thoughts, then we've also got to get the two chairs on board as well, right, with Senator Milner and Speaker Wilson. So it's a heavy lift, but I'm totally open to recirculating and figure out where we go next.
I just want to make sure when we put it forward, we put our best foot forward and we can support it and we feel good about it so that we can make the best changes possible for the system.
Thank you. President Church? Maybe we can talk about it. We can discuss it over lunch and come back to it. We're just going to have to really blitz through this afternoon. Regent Wright?
One question on governance. Didn't the legislature recently pass a statute that required members of the Board of Regents to come from trustee boards? And that is that in here?
Half of them.
Is that in this document?
We've talked about that really needs to be added, and I think there's no controversy around
Sorry, I didn't know that. Okay, and then the other, I guess the point to this broader conversation is we're trying to eliminate duplication and centralize higher education's mission and focus and align education with workforce, right? That's how I see this coming together. And we should really be making this about the students and what the students think and how they feel. And I think what we're trying to do is reduce cost so these degrees are more affordable, so people can achieve them at technical colleges and enter the workforce. So if that's the case and we're trying to reduce costs by combining systems, then it doesn't make a lot of sense to have a proposal go forward that has the same duplicate systems in place. That's my challenge, is the costs are going to be exactly the same. And so then the question begs, if we're trying to reduce costs by combining the systems, I'm all for that because I want to see the degrees more affordable. I want to see more of our taxpayers and their children in there getting the degrees that'll qualify them for the workforce. And I would just urge all of us to keep the focus on the students. This should really be about them and them being able to access the system and access it affordably and enter the workforce so that they can reach their full potential.
Thanks. I think we'd all agree with that. And this doesn't show the full amount, the full organization charts, but there would in fact be savings in putting these two together. Why don't we, we'd had another item, let me just briefly mention on the agenda for item 7, is just new agenda item discussion. And that, it was just intended to provide an opportunity for anybody who has thoughts about what you'd like to see on our meeting agendas over the next two or three meetings. And where we're short on time, I just invite anybody, email the commissioner, email me, or Vice Chair Barnes, send us ideas about what you'd like to see us devoting time to discussing here. So that's just soliciting your input. I think we're going to go ahead and adjourn or recess for lunch. We'll take 30 minutes. We had 45 and we're about 25 late, so we'll compromise here and we'll do 30 minutes for lunch. And